Jesus wore. Oh, when he wore. When Jesus wore. He washed my sins away.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to be talking about meatballs and what they do when you add them to a tomato sauce. Iowa State University has a new study on that. Plus today, we are continuing with our ongoing challenge to those who would censor us, for those who think that they had the power because they're the top dogs at Wikipedia, good associates with the other skeptics. So we've decided to challenge what it may be the most powerful and respected skeptic in the United States. And we're going to challenge him on a personal level. Don't know him. Never met him. He might be a nice man, good father, good relative, good friend. But is he good at what he does as far as disseminating information? He is great. If you're Dow Chemical, if you're Monsanto, if you're big, any of the major corporations like Coca-Cola, he's the best friend you could have. So how is it then that a person that we're going to show you has so many affiliations and has supported in writing the type of products that we are suggesting you should never use? How does he become someone that is referenced? Isn't it the rule at Wikipedia by their own bylaws that they cannot use in editing any story a biased resource? We feel you don't get much more biased about what you're talking about than this person. So we're going to provide a different point of view on America's leading skeptic, and hence the most important source, or one of the most important sources, along with Stephen Barrett, quoted on Wikipedia. This is an ongoing series because the average American, the average person around the world, uses Wikipedia as the source of everything when it comes to health. And they're down on everything. They're against acupuncture, chiropractic, all the leading proponents of alternative medicine, body, mind, medicine, Deepak Chopra. They're against all that. Well, how in the world could they be against everything when there are hundreds of thousands of studies in the peer-reviewed literature, hundreds of millions of people benefited, and hundreds of thousands of clinicians board certified from Harvard, Yale, Stanford, who support this? That's the power of arrogance. That's the power of people who are using a platform like a Wikipedia for their own ends. We're going to deconstruct that today. Tomorrow, by the way, I have just finished writing about 20 minutes ago a very important observation about Greta Thunberg, the young person who's here in the United States, came over in a sailboat and is promoting veganism. Quite simply, she is the most important environmental figure in the world today and doing more than all the other people combined. That means the Sierra Club and Greenpeace, all of them together, they're not able to do what this woman has been able to do. Why? What does it say about them? What does it say about her? That is on tomorrow's commentary. And then on Friday, we're going to deconstruct the myths about measles vaccines, at the same time that we are preparing people to understand it's all lies all the time. And you'll see what I'm talking about when you hear the commentary on Friday. Today also, Mary Holland, professor of international law, New York University's School of Law, in a discussion at the United Nations, good insights. We have independently confirmed with three other legal scholars, constitutional lawyers, that this may be a way for the vaccine challenged movement that is losing to have a way of not mandating childhood vaccines. So you see, we have a lot to share today. We're going to begin with the latest on health and healing. Now, there's a restaurant in New York City that specializes in meatballs. Fine, that's what you want. But what about meatballs when you're having them in a tomato sauce, which is pretty often spaghetti and meatballs? This study finds a twofold decrease in lycopene uptake with iron supplement. And you got a lot of iron in meat. So, according to High State University, eating your tomato sauce with meatballs piled on top could have a substantial downside. Some of the anti-cancer benefits of tomatoes, and there are a lot of good reasons to eat tomatoes, and especially tomatoes that have been cooked, because it liberates the lycopene. Specifically, lycopene has strong anti-cancer properties, but that lycopene could disappear when they're eaten with iron-rich foods. Researchers analyzed the blood and digestive fluids of a group of medical students after they consumed either a tomato extract-based shake with iron or one without iron. And lycopene levels in digestive fluids and in the blood were lower when the study drank the liquid meal mixed with iron. Now, when people eat a meal that's got iron, it's almost always meat. So therefore, don't eat meatballs. Eat the spaghetti, and hopefully you'll have a quinoa spaghetti or a rice, brown rice spaghetti. You can get quality spaghettis and pastas made gluten-free. But the meatballs, not a good idea, because we want to protect ourselves from cancer, and lycopene protects us from cancer. From the University of Jyväskylä in Finland comes an article about physical activity. It can attenuate menopause-associated atherogenic changes. What does that mean? Well, a new study on menopausal women shows that leisure time physical activity is associated with a healthier blood lipid file, meaning lower cholesterol, lower low-density lipoprotein, and that's a good thing. And if you have bad blood profile and exercising when you're in menopause, it will bring it down, but if you stop exercising, it comes right back up again. Now, that's good to know. And this was part of the estrogenic regulation of muscle apoptosis study, which examines the role of menopause on body composition and leisure time physical activity and the risk of metabolic disease. And I looked at the study and I read it. And it's good that you can lower LDL, triglycerides, fasting glucose levels, and that's all positive. However, they're just looking at one aspect, exercise, and then leisure exercise. Here's where some specific clinical study. I've done 43 clinical studies. These are not health support groups. That's separate. I've done over 200 health support groups. But a clinical study means that to get into it, you have to have proof, medically validated proof with medical records of what your condition is. Let's say I'm doing a menopausal study. To get into the study, you have to be in menopause. And you have to have at least 6 symptoms of the more than 70 symptoms that can occur in a body of some women going through menopause, such as thinning of the eyebrows, the outer part of the eyebrows, thinning of the hair, lots of fungus in the body and on the toenails, cracking and ridges on the fingernails, gum receding, mouth infections, sometimes irregular heartbeat, loss of libido, gaining weight without extra eating, mood swings, insomnia, urinary incontinence, more urinary tract infections, loss of muscle mass, loss of energy, loss of strength, and memory decline. Those are some of the symptoms. So once a person qualifies to get into the study, and generally speaking, they can be as young as 47, as old as 58. We had 500 women who actually qualified, 2,000 wanted to get in, but they didn't qualify. Now, once in a study, We met every week 52 times for 1 year. And if they didn't do their homework, they weren't allowed in the study. They were out because some people historically wanted to come to studies because they were lonely. Other people, they just wanted to learn something but didn't have any intention of really applying it. And so they were taking space. And when you're doing a clinical study, unlike a health support group, you look at statistics. How many people improved, how many didn't. But let's say you didn't do the protocol, but you showed up. That's going to weigh negatively on the total outcome. So that's like with my anti-aging clinical study, and I'm out on the road now preparing for it. If you had life-threatening diseases, like cancer, advanced heart disease, then that is a separate protocol that has to be applied to help that person. Not in an anti-aging study, because a person might benefit from lowering their blood pressure and even re-regulating their heart rhythms, etc., and feel better, more energy. That's all good, and we want that. But then where would be the protocol to change the DNA, and for the first time in history, to show you could actually reverse the timing of aging in the body? As a result, we had to be very strict. No life-ending diseases allowed in the study because it would skew it immediately to the negative, in which case people could get healthier, but they wouldn't de-age the DNA. We wouldn't repair the breaks in the DNA, the 10,000 gene alterations in the average cell every day. And hence, we wouldn't have biological markers that showed objective results. So understand, a lecture, a health support group, those don't have the same criteria. Studies do. So in this menopausal study that I did, people adhered to it. And those who thought they didn't have to, they were not allowed in after they came back with no homework and no proof they'd been exercising, nothing changed in the diet. They're supposed to keep a diary, what they've gotten rid of, it was bad. And so the ones who stuck with it really stuck with it. Well, the results at the end of a year were nothing less than spectacular. Six of the women actually reversed their menopause. One woman had reversed it to the degree that everything changed. Hair grew back natural color. She was 56 years of age. She showed us all her hair on the last day, pulled her hair back and said, "This is all new hair. I was going thin and bald. My nails are pink and hard and thin. I haven't had an infection. I sleep through the night. My libido's back. I can have normal relations with my husband." And which we hadn't been able to have for about 5 years because of chafing and infection and bleeding and pain, and that occurs when the mucous membranes dry out in the vagina. And I no longer have arthritis in my knees. And so these are objective, and we got that published in a peer-reviewed journal. None of that do I see in this study. None of it. And our exercise was very specific. Twice a day, 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour in the evening. And people lost an average of 15% body mass index. So they went from 30 to 15%. Now that's when you're really in shape. So, but I never see these studies including multiple variables. It's always just one item. But still, they got good results. So I commend them on that. But at least you know that life is not about one piece of a puzzle found and walking around as if somehow you're wiser because of it. There are thousands of pieces of puzzle we have to become aware of. Here's another one. This is from the Baker Heart and Diabetes Institute, published in Redox Biology. Vitamin E is found to prevent muscle damage after a heart attack. I received a call last week, late in the evening, and it was from someone who I've known for a long time. She's 95, and her husband said she just had multiple strokes. And what do we do? And I talked about, well, we do have exemplary emergency care and medical emergencies in the United States. So that's good to know. You're going to be in good hands there. But make sure, and then I listed the things that I would suggest that they do also. And one of them was vitamin E. But not the amount that an average person would take to maintain good health. Because remember, you have to follow what is called the laws of compensation to the degree that you have, let's say, perfect health or good health, then the amounts of nutrients you're going to be requiring from your diet and supplements and juices is going to be different than if you're near death, in which case you may have to go extremely high doses under the medical supervision of people who know what they're talking about. In any case, one of the things, why vitamin E, I was asked? Well, it's simple. Because heart attack and stroke are leading causes of death worldwide. And there's new treatment strategies. And unfortunately, the lasting damage to the heart muscle is not uncommon following an event. Like in the brain, it's a stroke, and the heart attack is a heart attack. But what happens is that most of the effective antioxidant, anti-inflammatory agents, are not being in a person's body at the time they've had this event. And you need to fill the body with those things that can make a big difference, like vitamin E, vitamin C. They can make a huge difference. Coenzyme Q10 is a huge difference in saving a heart attack person's life. They'll do the magnesium sulfate and other things intravenous and try to correct any of the damage to prevent cardiac damage from worsening. Currently, there is no drug available that can reduce the cardiac damage caused by an overshooting inflammation after reopening a blocked coronary artery. And therefore, what vitamin E does in this particular study, which was by the European Commission Scientific Committee on Food, that would be equivalent to our FDA, but at least they're honest and ethical, that is important. So just remember, you should always carry around a little emergency kit with you, little thing. You know, put it in those little containers. Always have the following. High potency cayenne, what are called high heat values. This could save your life. I would put three of those in there. Three capsules, vegan capsules. Coenzyme Q10 from ubiquinol. I'd have about 500 milligrams. Magnesium from citrate. I would have probably 2,000 milligrams. And L-carnitine, 2,000 milligrams. Those are some of the most important, but not all, the nutrients that can really make a difference if there's a stroke or heart attack, and vitamin E at 800 units. So if you're ever in a situation, let's hope you're not, where you need that, then you will, and that could save your life. Buckwheat can reduce bad cholesterol levels, according to Peking Medical University College, published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrition Research. Now, buckwheat is very tasty, by the way, but it can help improve insulin levels in people with type 2 diabetes, and that's important. It can also reduce the bad cholesterol levels, the LDL cholesterol. That's terrific. So I would use, if you're making buckwheat, you don't have to boil it. Just put hot water on groats, and they absorb the water and make themselves completely edible. And then you can put whatever you want on there to add to it, like some cranberries, raspberries, coconut oil, some rice milk. Got yourself a great little breakfast. You're getting also some high-quality fiber, and it lowers the low-density lipoprotein, and it lowers your level of fasting insulin that can control your blood sugar. All good. People just don't eat buckwheat in this country for some reason. They should. From Rutgers Cancer Institute in New Jersey, high calcium, low lactose, there's your dairy, diet can reduce the risk of ovarian cancer in African-American women, published in the prestigious British Journal of Cancer. So what am I saying? I'm saying make sure you're getting about 800 milligrams a day of calcium and magnesium, both the same, and get rid of all dairy, milk, cheese, cottage cheese, cream cheese, get rid of it. And you can help reduce, just with those two simple things, you can help reduce ovarian cancer in African-American women. So that's important. And by the way, ovarian cancer is the fifth leading cause of cancer death among women in the United States, according to the National Cancer Institute. And while five-year survival rates at this disease level have improved in Caucasian women from 35% in 1975 to 46% today. They've actually decreased in African-American females during the same period from 42 to 38%. So it's not a cancer you want to get, especially if you're African-American, because you can die from it. So important to understand that. And from Sao Paulo State University, compounds extracted from cerrado, C-E-R-R-A-D-O, that's a plant, can combat fungus that causes candidiasis. Now, we know that candidiasis is a problem. It's also called thrush. It's a fairly common disease in humans, and it can be lethal to individuals with low immunity, especially when they are hospitalized. Although the drug most widely used to combat the disease is effective in most cases, some varieties of the fungus are drug-resistant. And the compounds that combat two species of candida have now been isolated from a plant that's found in Brazil and Spain. And it's a shrub native to the cerrado, and that means this brilliant for savanna. Let me give you the spelling of it. Mimosa, M-I-M-O-S-A. That's the plant. And they use it in these countries. So it's they use it as an ointment and helps clear up the candida. And that's important. And finally, added sugar intake is associated with blood pressure increasing in older females. University of Delaware, according to research, hypertension or high blood pressure is highly prevalent in the aging population. Notably, diet and lifestyle have a strong influence on blood pressure. But when you take in sugar, and unfortunately America has a sweet tooth, you're increasing your risk of having a stroke. It's that simple. Let me do one more, because this is about the monk fruit, M-O-N-K. It's shown to improve stem cell function. This, according to the Chinese Academy of Medical Sciences, published in the American Journal of Chinese Medicine, they found that the monk fruit can improve stem cell function, leading to a slower aging process. I've been recommending monk fruit for people who have the diseases of lifestyle that we attribute to aging, and it helps stimulate. In fact, we can do a lot to stimulate our own natural stem cells to be act younger. You'll see that in about 90 days. So, by the way, monk fruit is not so exotic you can't find it. You can get it dried. That way it doesn't go bad. Put it in your refrigerator. It'll last almost years. And monk fruit decreases the expression of senescence-associated proteins in mice. And all these improve the function of what is necessary to slow down the aging process. So, and by the way, University of Nottingham Medical School found chamomile proven to fight anxiety and clinical depression. Well, thanks for catching up, because those in the health movement have been using chamomile as a relaxant for probably 60 years. But at least they're onto it now. A medical school, and said it significantly relaxed blood vessels and smooth muscle fibers. The effect was indicated specifically with the application of three of chamomile's central constituents, apigenin, A-P-I-G-E-N-I-N, lutolone, L-U-T-E-O-L-I-N, and bisabolol, B-I-S-A-B-O-L-O-L. These are all what are called hydroxylates. So chamomile has all these wonderful phytochemicals, and it works for depression and anxiety. We're out of time on health and nutrition. We're 24 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break and come right back and continue with our latest article challenging the legitimacy of Wikipedia and Jimmy Wells to claim that, well, anybody can edit anything in there. Not true. Well, we're not going to allow anyone who's biased to be editing their bias into an article. Not true. Well, we wouldn't sacrifice people's reputations because of some ideological or political or economic bias. Not true. In fact, I don't know what is true ever coming from Wikipedia's editors, and certainly not its skeptics that control everything on health. but we're about to take them on in ways that took a lot of scholarship and research, as you will see. It's important that if you believe this, then share it. Remember, they have everything on their side. They have Facebook, Google, YouTube. They're censoring everything. If you want to put something out there that is legitimate and honest, that challenges vaccines or GMOs or 5G, they're going to censor it. Then they're going to have their attack lapdogs at the New York Times and Washington Post, Jeff Bozo, the clowns, little Twitter company that he owns. What a disgrace. In any case, they control our government. They control Congress. They bought these people. So who are you going to turn to? Where's your backup? Where's your plan B? You've got none. Zero. You are screwed. But wait till they come knocking on your door. Mandating a vaccine for adults. That's what's been happening now. I've seen the bill. I've read the bill. Same doctor that got it through in California on kids now got adults coming. They went to go after the adults because you're a bigger market. And they can mandate more vaccines. They could give you 100 vaccines. Let's just hope they start with all the members of the Democratic Corporate Party first. Bill and Hillary Clinton, give them 10,000 vaccines. Yeah. They support Big Pharma and the vaccine makers. Back in a moment, because we're taking them on. And by the way, I have 100 more articles coming and multiple lawsuits coming and investigations coming to challenge Wikipedia. Let's see how smarty pants they are with all those big law firms out there. Bring on your law firms, because we're coming to get you into the public arena. You have my word on that. Back in a moment. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Richard Gale and I spent a lot of time digging into the background of every single skeptic. This is just one, but probably, or in our opinion, the most quoted and respected. So he's the leader. So go after the most credible person. Our title, Wikipedia's Leading a Better in pro-industry skepticism. For all of skepticism's animosity against climate change denialism, oddly, this fringe faction within the scientific community consistently supports private corporate interests that contribute to the destruction of the environment and rising greenhouse gas emissions. Now, those skeptics admirably deconstruct the arguments of a tiny minority of public voices who reject the evidence of anthropogenic global warming. Nevertheless, skepticism routinely fails to agree with the scientific consensus that solutions will require our strengthening ecological resilience, such as reforestation of lands that are being stripped away in order to raise more cattle for hamburgers, larger monocrop farms to plant GMOs, and blanketing poisons across the landscape that kill pollinators and birds, bees, and other wildlife. Now, we know that there are over 2,000 fires currently in the Amazon, but that's out of the headline. We had it in the headline for a day. It's gone, but the fires stay. The destruction of indigenous culture stays. But why? These are human-made fires. They're burning the land so that they can harvest the trees to ship off to China so it can make cheap furniture and ship it back in the United States. Okay, that's a big deal. They can then clear hundreds of thousands of acres, over two soccer fields per 60 seconds. And that means that, and in fact, it's not every 6 seconds, it's every hour, excuse me. But they can do that because the world has an ever-increasing desire to eat meat. In fact, the Chinese people have increased their consumption of meat by over 500%. And they're the largest population in the world, almost tied with India. about 1.3 billion each. Well, to get all that meat into people's bodies, pork and beef and chicken, you have to grow the feed that it's going to have. China doesn't do that, so it relies upon the Amazon, the lungs of the planet. No good consciousness there. So when we talk about having a hamburger, and you're seeing the ads, which are ever present in the media, understand that, yes, we've got the beef, and every day it gets more creative. Now they're putting the big bun, refined carbohydrates, sugar, and white flour, nothing good, all bad. And then they give you beef. Yeah, and now they're giving you beef patty and sausage and home fries and onion rings, all and cheese and an egg. I mean, just stack. Everyone's just putting more and more and more of what people normally like on one plate and make it at a reasonable price. At what cost? People don't care. Why don't they care? Well, their appetite's all they care about, and satisfying that appetite right now. And how do they know? Advertising. Isn't there any ethics in advertising? Not about health, there's not, or environmental destruction to get all this to a place where people can have the food they want. And as a result, global warming is increasing. And unfortunately, not a lot of people are addressing this as they should. But we do know that we would miss the magnitude of skepticisms. They're on Wikipedia. Remember, they control everything on health there. Their threats to the environment and human health, if we were to limit its perception to a boys club of belligerent, like-minded people who embrace atheism, that's a big thing, got to be an atheist, and an extreme materialistic interpretation of reality. Rather, it is a wide network of organizations and publications and individuals with tentacles reaching Silicon Valley firms and the social media and universities and TED Talks and private industry-supported front groups and especially online resources like Wikipedia. Modern skepticism's singular mission appears to promulgate a distinctly secular and scientific ideology that would marginalize and discredit belief systems, medical disciplines, and sustainable ecological remedies that disagree with skepticism's doctrine. But hold on. Doesn't Wikipedia allow to promote the benefits of veganism and organic diet and healthy living? No. Perhaps the most pro-industry faction within the skeptical network is the Society for Science-Based Medicine. Never heard of it? You're not alone. And its online site, Science-Based Medicine, SBM. Most notably are Science-Based Medicine's co-founders, Dr. Stephen Novella, N-O-V-E-L-L-A, and David Gorski. Now, aside from Science-Based Medicine's consistent assaults against complementary and alternative medicine practices, Novella, in our opinion, frequently defends the most egregious and questionable junk science supported and often funded by corporate industries in their fight against regulatory policies and independent science that warns about the safety and health risks of their products. Consequently, aside from his professional background in neuroscience, Novella oddly presents himself as an expert in his defense of products such as endocrine-disrupting bisphenol A, the herbicide glyphosate, or Roundup, genetically modified foods, synthetic chemical sweeteners, and more recently, the telecommunications industry talking points about the undocumented safety of 5G rollout. He defends all these. He defends these products despite thousands of peer-reviewed studies to the contrary. Over the years, he has expressed opposition to a gluten-free diet, aside from the 1% who have celiac disease, the state licensure of acupuncturists, veganism, he's really against it, nutritional therapies, and the keto diet for mental disorders. He's against omega-3 and dietary supplements and antioxidants, etc. If you happen to have noticed that this list is eerily similar to what is found on Stephen Barrett's Quack Watch, we believe it is no accident. Novella sits on QuackWatch's advisory board, and in principle, his science-based medicine organization is the successor of the QuackWatch's faux public image as a protector of consumer health. Now, as we've reported before, Novella has publicly announced that his society has received articles, quote, generously donated by Stephen Barrett, essentially thousands of articles that make up QuackWatch, transforming this into a wiki that will allow ongoing editing and updating, breathing new life into all these old articles, end quote. Okay, Novella's goal is, quote, to list reliable science-based medical information everywhere on the web, end quote. So we offer a challenge. We're going to be going through every one of those articles, every single one that Stephen Barrett ever wrote. We're doing it now. And we're going to offer what we consider reliable science-based medical information that challenges those articles. In 2012, Novella and his science-based medicine colleague, Dr. Harriet Hall, were awarded membership on the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry's Executive Council. Novella was also an associate editor of the Center of Inquiry's failed peer-review medical journal. The Scientific Review of Alternative Medicine. On several occasions, the journal's applications for acceptance into the National Library of Medicine were denied for its scientifically unsound and biased articles. Hold on. If the articles in the journal that all the skeptics are quoting from as reliable sources were said by the National Library of Medicine, in effect, to be scientifically unsound and biased, then Jimmy Wells, you've got a lot of explaining to do to the Internal Revenue Service Inspector General and to every member of Congress, and to the fact that you were given a special indemnification from being sued for slander, even though your group commits slander all the time. So how can then the National Library of Medicine find you biased, and you say you don't allow bias in editing? That's something to think about. And by the way, Novella currently serves as the president of the New England Skeptical Society and sits on the advisory board of the pro-industry's front organization, ready? The American Council on Science and Health. I debated Elizabeth Whalen, its president, first president, decades ago on NBC National Radio. And what was the topic? Sugar. I had 36 articles from peer-reviewed journals to show how dangerous sugar was, and she didn't. But she just believed it was all nonsense, and anyone who would attack sugar, well, they were on the wrong side. The trouble is we were on the right side, and the American Council on Science and Health has stayed on the wrong side, not the wrong side financially, because corporate America loves the American Council on Science and Health, and despite science-based medicine's members' tantrums denying charges that they shill for the pharmaceutical industry and other private corporate interests, Novella's association with the American Council on Science and Health gives ample reason for being suspicious about his claims of scientific independence. It also explains why he consistently backs industry public relations talking points despite the volumes of independent research debunking corporate assertions. After hearing what other organizations and individuals had to say about the American Council on Science and Health, we can better appreciate where Novella may receive his marching orders in his seeming full-time blogging career. As early as 1979, the FDA's information director, mind you, this is the FDA information's director of the FDA, accused American Science Council on Science and Health founder Elizabeth Whalen for, quote, making blanket endorsements of food additives. Her organization is a sham, an industry front. Let me repeat that. This is from the FDA's information director. Elizabeth Whalen's, quote, making up, quote, blanket endorsements of food additives, and her organization is a sham, an industry front. Wow, harsh words. Did the New York Times pick up on this? Washington Post? Anyone else post that information? not that we can find. A few years later, the Center for Science and Public Interest released a report accusing the American Council on Science Health for, quote, arriving at conclusions before conducting studies. Well, hold on a second. How can you conduct a legitimate study if you have created the conclusion before the study is conducted? You can't do that. Well, I guess you can if you're them. Quote, arriving at conclusions before conducting studies through voodoo and alchemy. Bodies of scientific knowledge are transmogrified into industry-oriented position statements, end quote. That means supporting industry. The center's director separately wrote, quote, this organization promotes confusion among consumers about what is safe and what isn't. The American Council on Science and Health is using a slick scientific veneer to obscure and deny truths that virtually everyone else agrees with, end quote. Ralph Nader has called the American Council on Science and Health, quote, a consumer front organization for business backers. Okay, and Greenpeace has described the American Council on Science and Health as, quote, a Coke industry climate-denying front group, end quote. And in 2017, a consortium of 26 environmental, university medical departments, and medical associations, labor and public interest organizations sent a joint request to USA Today demanding that the magazine, quote, refrain from publishing further columns authored by members of the American Council on Science and Health, end quote. That's audacious. This would include Stephen Novella due to his long association with the American Council on Science and Health as an advisory board member. Therefore, Novella's personal denial of conflict of interest and industry bias is conspicuously absurd. The American Council on Science and Health's own mission statement encapsulates excellently Novella's and his society's long-term goals. Quote, listen carefully to this. In the span of nearly 40 years, we have managed to irritate a lot of activists and environmentalists who make a living scaring the public over vaccines, GMOs, nuclear power, chemicals, and anything else they can get them on TV. Our mission is to oppose such nonsense and support evidence-based science and medicine. Hence our tagline, science not hype, end quote. Well, it's therefore not surprising that the American Council on Science and Health donors, who are these people, these pillars of integrity in environmental issues, consumer health? Well, good ones. I would say Chevron, ExxonMobil, Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, McDonald's, Bristol-Myers Squibb, Procter & Gamble, almost all of the agricultural giants, hey, Bayer, Monsanto, Dow Agra, Syngenta, and tobacco companies such as Altria, Reynolds American, Philip Morris, and British American Tobacco. This raises a serious question whether these corporations could be Novella's true masters and his Society for Science-Based Medicine is actually another front group for private industry. Just a question. Is it? Is it not? He'll answer that. Perhaps the best example of Novella's audaciousness is a recent attempt to discredit a 10-nation European study conducted by a network of 43 universities and research institutions that found a direct correlation between soft drink consumption and death. The American Council on Science and Health has a long history of opposing regulations and additional tax on sugar, saturated sodas, and heavily processed junk foods, and has defended the neurotoxin aspartame. Wasn't that another miracle invented by Monsanto and protected by, who was the Secretary of Defense? Rumsfeld? And isn't that used in diet soft drinks? Yeah. Now, although this multi-institutional report was a cohort study, it nevertheless evaluated over 451,000 persons. The analysis, therefore, was largely robust, although by no means conclusively perfect. Cohort studies never are. However, Novella criticized the conclusions because of the fact that it was a cohort study. On the other hand, Novella and his other science-based medicine colleagues regularly accept much smaller and flawed cohort research when it serves their ideological purposes. For example, in their ongoing attacks against physicians and parents who question vaccine safety, the only ammunition they have in their arsenal are cohort and population studies that deny an autism vaccine relationship. This is just one of many examples of science-based medicine's glaring hypocrisies and how they preferentially interpret medical literature for their own ends. In his article, "Organic Farming is Bad for the Environment," end quote, Novella promulgates a common big agricultural fantasy that, quote, "The evidence is clear that organic farming on any meaningful scale is significantly less land efficient than conventional farming," end quote. His data relies upon a vague German study. His solution is more GMO crops, more toxic pesticides, more industrial agriculture. Yes, the evidence is clear, but in direct contradiction to the articles pitching for companies such as Monsanto and Bayer and Syngenta, the facts tell a very different story. Novella's article attracted strong criticism. One comment not only nailed Novella on his sloppy review of the data, but also noted the study was particularly and partially based upon one of the author's master's thesis at Chalmers University in Sweden. The study was published in the obscure Journal of Cleaner Production. Falling back on the defensive, Novella adds a comment, quote, "I never claimed that we are not producing enough food right now to feed the world. We are, if we optimize distribution and reduce waste," end quote. Novella is seemingly blind to the fact that the planet is already primarily being fed by traditional agriculture, including pesticide-free organic methods. GMO farmers only represent approximately 0.38%, that's 3.8 million, of the world's 1 billion farmers. Therefore, over 99% of all farmers in the world rely upon local, traditional, and organic and sustainable farming. We can thank non-GMO farmers for sustaining our global food security. As of 2014, 90% of all GMO crops were grown in just 5 countries around the world among the 28 nations that permit GMOs. Another 5, according to Cornell University-trained molecular biologist John Fagan, grows an additional 8%. In fact, over 90% of GMO crops comprise only 4 plants: canola, corn, cotton, and soy. This would hardly suffice to feed the world's population. You're going to feed them cotton? How's canola oil going to help anyone? And both the EPA and the USDA have repeatedly claimed that industrial agriculture is responsible for 9% of the U.S. total greenhouse gas emissions. Wrong. This figure, too, is overly conservative and misleading because it underestimates methane and nitrous oxide pollution from factory and monocrop farms and animal feedlots. It also ignores ethanol production and the massive use of petroleum products and fossil fuels to energize the industrial agricultural experiment. Novella would have us believe that this study closes the case against agricultural farming's carbon footprint. Fortunately, German officials will have nothing to do with the study Novella relies upon. On the German Ministry for Economic Cooperation and Development, we found this, quote, "Agriculture has also a great deal to do with potential for climate change mitigation. Through sustainable farming and good agriculture practices such as the use of organic fertilizer, crop rotation, cultivation of fruit and other trees, and improved feed for livestock," end quote. The ministry has also stated that food security can only be assured through agricultural biodiversity. However, the chemical-based GMO agriculture Novella defends destroys biodiversity. So based upon recommendations from Germany's environmental ministry, the country has come down hard on the use of glyphosate and plans to phase it out in the next 4 years because of its detrimental impact on the environment. The European Union only approved the use of glyphosate through the next 4 years. actually the next 3 years. The forthcoming review will hopefully be a death sentence for the toxic herbicide, as further investigations and the release of internal documents reveal the extent of Monsanto's malfeasance and efforts to cover up its products' health and environmental risks. At present, 19 of 26 European Union nations are making efforts to ban GMOs. Glyphosate has already been banned or dramatically restricted in Austria, the Czech Republic, France, Italy, the Netherlands. Other nations that have banned GMOs include Russia, which is now the world's leading producer of organic produce, Algeria, Madagascar, Turkey, Bhutan, Saudi Arabia, Peru, Ecuador, and Venezuela. Novella has also criticized the California court's decision to award damages to victims of glyphosate exposure, claiming the ruling was not confirmed by the science. Really? He continues to argue that the levels of the herbicide that humans consume pose no health risks. The article was posted by John Entine's Genetic Literacy Project. The project's primary partner and funder is Monsanto. Ooh. And operates as a public relations effort on behalf of Big Ag to protect and defend GMOs and agrochemical products. Entine's work, notably his book, Scared to Death, is also promoted on and by the American Council on Science and Health. Well, back in 2014, Novella made a hasty claim, quote, "We now have the large set of data, both experimental and observational, showing that genetically modified feed is safe and nutritionally equivalent to non-GMO feed. There does not appear to be any health risks to the animals, and even less likely that there could be any health effects on humans who eat those animals," end quote. Well, according to the American Academy of Environmental Medicine, animal research indicates illnesses humans should be worried about include infertility, immune dysfunction, accelerated aging, insulin regulation, abnormalities, and adverse changes in major organs and gastrointestinal systems. Whoa. Just several months ago, biologists at Washington State University observed a variety of diseases in the second and third generation offspring of rats fed Roundup Ready feed. In effect, this study replicated Dr. Cerellini's earlier study that found rat descendants developing prostate, kidney, and ovarian illnesses, obesity, and birth abnormalities. Males had a 30% increase in prostate disease, and females a 40% increase in kidney disorders. Only in recent years are nutritional intake differences between GMOs and organic foods coming to light, and the latter is winning. Organic is winning. Unlike organic farming, industrial agriculture, which depends upon synthetic fertilizers and chemical pesticides and herbicides, depletes the soil. For example, the Mayo Clinic has cataloged small but moderate increases in flavonoids, including antioxidants found in organic produce. In 2017, a six-nation study, Belgium, Denmark, France, Poland, Sweden, as well as Harvard University, undertook a comprehensive review of the health implications of organic versus conventional agriculture. The study concluded organic food reduced the risk of allergenic diseases, but Novella has suggested organic produce should be banned for allergies. Pesticide use in industrial agriculture adversely affects childhood cognitive development. There's minimal nutrient differences, except organic fruits and vegetables have higher phenolic compounds. And antibiotic use in conventional animal production is contributing to antibiotic resistance. Finally, we might take note that 2 years ago, Novella gave a glowing review to the book Getting Risk Right by author Dr. Jeffrey Kebet, an epidemiologist at Albert Einstein School of Medicine. Kebet is Novella's colleague on the American Council on Science and Health Board of Scientific Advisors. In effect, Novella agrees with Cabot's imaginary claims that cell phone use reduces the risk of brain tumors. The adverse effects associated with BPA may likely be due to contamination of blood samples and experiments, and that without the human papilloma virus, there would be no cervical cancer, and therefore the human papilloma virus vaccine should be mandatory, and that 99.7% of dietary supplements are unsafe, etc. Novella seemingly agrees with all of Cabot's outrageous declarations. However, we did some homework. For years, Cabot has written opinions against environmental and health activists to protect Monsanto. He collaborates with John Entine on the Genetic Literacy Project mentioned above, where he has made the claim that there are no more studies that, quote, we can do to show that glyphosate is safe, end quote, an article he wrote for Forbes magazine to discredit scientists who raise health concerns about Roundup was pulled by the publication because of its failure to disclose his relationship with the Council, American Council on Science, and health. And worse, Cabot has regularly authored papers backing the tobacco industry's argument that secondhand smoke does not increase cancer and heart disease risk. According to the public interest organization U.S. Right to Know, a search through the University of California's tobacco industry documents pull up 800 files associated with Cabot, including invoices for consulting to tobacco company at $350 an hour, at least on the issue of smoking. Well, Novella sharply disagrees, but on all other matters, he and Cabot walk conclusions together. So if Stephen Novella wants to, you know, support that, that's his right. And if Cabot wants to believe that secondhand smoke is not harmful, that's his right, but it's not the science. In conclusion, so let's be very clear. In our opinion, Novella is not a champion of public health. Time and again, he defends corporate interest. He's a master wordsmith who has succeeded in tailoring the illusion of science-based medicine as a new gold standard. Nevertheless, it is only a ruse to confuse the public and protect corporate interest. And Wikipedia's co-founder, Jimmy Wells, has bought into this nonsense by showing favor to skeptic editors such as the Guerrilla Skeptics on Wikipedia, who look upon Novella as a god of scientific genius. Throughout Wikipedia pages on complementary and alternative medicine and the topics discussed in this article, Novella's writings are frequently used as authoritative references. Wikipedia, on the other hand, claims to not permit biased resources as legitimate references. Yet nothing can be further from the truth, because Novella and science-based medicine authors are thoroughly compromised. Wikipedia is losing all credibility, and the encyclopedia would be better served to the health of the public if it were to ban references to science-based medicine altogether. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.